Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we are plunging into some really profound source material. It's this single writing that gives a very specific, very detailed way of looking at two concepts that, well, they touch all of our lives. What it calls the ego, or das Ich, and the self, das Selbst.
Yeah, and our job today really is to guide you through this particular text. We want to unpack exactly what it's saying about where these things come from, how they form their purpose, and maybe most importantly, how they connect to, you know, our sense of reality in the world. We're sticking just to what's in these pages.
Right, so we're not aiming to give you the final word on ego and self, but more explore the really interesting angle this specific source takes, pull out the key ideas, and just see how it lands for you.
Okay, so let's start where the text does. Let's really dig into its description of the ego, das Ich. It paints it as a center, something that developed in the brain through evolution, its basic job. Perception. Yeah, perceiving the outside world and perceiving our own body, our history, moods, physical feelings, thoughts, emotions, the whole package.
So it's almost like the brain cooked up this, like, central command. And the text says its job is the best possible organization, using our world, using the body as its main tool.
Exactly, its instrument. But what jumped out at me right away is how the text describes the ego as having this built-in, this dual nature from the get-go. It's not just simple.
Dual nature, how so?
Well, the text says it's formed from a real mix of everything, both the good stuff, like conscious efforts, achievements, joy, insights from our ancestors and us, plus things like dedication, empathy, courage, care.
Okay, the positive qualities.
Right, but also equally incorporating the, let's say, the harder stuff, the carelessness, failures, feeling overwhelmed, trauma, disappointment, suffering, all those entanglements, mistakes, fear, being closed off, greed. Again, from the past and from our own lives, it's this whole complicated soup that makes up the ego.
Wow, so it's a real blend.
And here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Because all our individual egos are made this way, the text says they're fundamentally connected. It talks about this huge network of life, suggesting that every single movement, every bit of suffering or joy, every action in one ego actually ripples through the whole net.
That's quite an image. Not just separate people, but this giant web of ego consciousness.
Yeah.
And the text then uses that idea to critique society.
It does. It says, look, a society did emerge from this connection, but our collective understanding of ourselves, well, it just ignores this basic truth. It doesn't acknowledge the interconnectedness.
So society focuses on
the achievements, yeah, right. The shiny positive parts of the ego. But it actively pushes down, represses the unconscious bits, the shadows, and this whole dynamic, which kind of reflects our shared hopes and our shared messes, it's become self-perpetuating. And the text argues that's what's leading to the destruction of our world.
And it names specific things, doesn't it? How this destruction shows up.
Oh, yeah. Egocentrism, those deep entanglements we carry, carelessness, fear, greed, suffering, and also being cut off from that suffering.
So if we connect the dots here,
yeah.
The text is saying that this thing born from connection, the ego network, has developed this massive blind spot about itself, leading to all these destructive patterns we see.
That's the argument it lays out, yes. It's quite a strong critique.
Okay, so we have this complex, dual-natured ego, part of a network, but collectively kind of lost and causing problems because it ignores its own reality. Let's pivot now. What about the other big concept, the self, das Selbst? How does this source define that?
Well, the self, according to this text, embodies something much bigger. It's described as the connection of creation and evolution to the infinite with all its endless diversity. And crucially, it says this self shows up, manifests right within our conscious being.
And the text mentions, doesn't it, that people have sensed this bigger reality in lots of ways, different names, different paths.
Exactly. It says you might perceive it as a divine you or a helper, a friend, a lover, or simply the self that opens your heart. But underneath, the text insists these are all ways of touching the same fundamental truth.
Okay.
Yeah.
And does it give examples of when we might touch this? When the ego connects with the self?
It does. And this is really helpful, I think. It points to specific moments where the ego can kind of reconnect or experience something beyond ordinary time and space. Things like near-death experiences.
Okay.
Or moments of huge joy or deep need. Profound connection with your body, maybe with a powerful emotion, a sudden insight, connecting deeply with other people or with nature.
Silence, too.
Yes, deep silence or experiences you might call sacred. Moments that sort of pull you out of the everyday flow and into this absolute presence.
Like cracking open the usual view.
Yeah, exactly. And the text suggests these moments are glimpses of the kind of strength and guidance available through the self. resources, it says, we desperately need to navigate what it calls the chaos of our confusions.
Right, that chaos. That's the next big thing the text really digs into, isn't it? The consequences of ignoring this inner reality, this self-connection.
Yes. It describes this chaos of our confusions showing up as, well, accelerating and threatening problems, dysfunctions in society and on the earth itself.
And it draws a direct line, doesn't it, between ignoring the self, ignoring earth's needs, and destruction.
It's very direct. It says, ignoring our inner reality and Earth's needs leads straight to the destruction of creation, driven by the ego acting carelessly, unjustly, greedily, exploiting things, depleting, poisoning the world and everyone in it.
That's heavy. And it talks about internal effects, too.
Oh, absolutely. It paints a picture of living in this atmosphere of suffering, confusion, ignorance, violence, helplessness, feeling totally overwhelmed. It says our bodies react ailments, diseases, our perception, our feelings get kind of dulled, reduced by outside stuff like media. Our thoughts just spin uselessly.
It sounds like a state of total overwhelm, inside and out. And the text points out something really interesting here. That even when egos start to notice the chaos and resist society's demands,
yeah,
they often do it without really getting a handle on their own inner reality first, without connecting to the self.
Exactly. They're trying to fix the problem using the same limited, separated viewpoint that, according to this text, actually caused the problem in the first place.
Which brings up that question again. If the ego's job is organization, like the text said earlier, how does it end up creating so much mess?
And the text's answer seems to consistently point back to this separation from the self and the filtered, limited way the ego then perceives reality.
Okay, let's go even deeper then.
Yeah.
How does the text break down the ego's structure? It mentions it being like a program.
Yeah, it elaborates on that. The ego as a program running in the brain, developing over our lifetime. A self-reflecting structure connecting patterns, thoughts, feelings, connecting them to the body.
And he uses that phrase, the chef in house, the boss in the house.
I love that phrase too, yes, the boss in the house. But the text argues this boss often runs the show without really appreciating the gifts it has or even seeing how much it depends on the body it lives in, the community around it, the earth supporting it all.
So it doesn't really understand itself.
Right. It doesn't reflect on where it came from or what it's made of, which the text says includes different aspects, sometimes called sub-egos or inner children. And just recognizing those parts, the text suggests, helps limit their power when they get disruptive.
Okay, this is fascinating. Let's unpack those specific programs the text lays out. It links them to the body somehow. Solar plexus, fascia.
Yes, it gets quite specific there. It links these core ego programs to the autonomic nervous system, saying they're processed in the solar plexus, that bundle of nerves in your gut area, and this regulates body and psyche through the fascia, the connective tissue that runs everywhere. And the text notes, overload in this system, that can lead to disorders.
Wow. Okay. And it lists specific dominant programs.
It does. Five dominant ego programs, and it traces them back to very basic needs and tendencies.
Okay, what's the first one?
First, coming from nourishment and reproduction is the desire for more. Just more.
Wait, said second.
Second, from the struggle to survive, the desire for what it doesn't have, always looking at the lack.
Okay, third one.
Third, from our deep need to be nurtured, the desire to be seen, whether that's wanting our pain seen, or our strength, or our beauty.
The need for recognition. Got it. Fourth.
Fourth comes from inertia, maybe comfort seeking, the focus on unsolvable problems or problems that make us feel pitiable, getting stuck there.
Hmm. Okay. And the fifth?
Fifth is often linked to feeling disconnected from the body, a tendency to overtax the body and also to lose control over whether our thoughts and emotions actually fit the situation, like overreacting or underreacting.
That's a really concrete list. And it says these programs get powerful how?
By linking their satisfaction with pleasure. Simple reward mechanism, basically.
But it makes a distinction, right? They aren't all bad.
Crucial distinction, yes. When these programs are tied up with unconscious desires and fears, the text says, that's when they confuse the mind, block real feeling, and lead to exploitation and destruction. But when they are linked instead to the conscious shared development of thought and emotion working together, essentially they actually have the potential to inspire the mind and help build the world.
So they have a constructive side too.
Absolutely. in that conscious state, they can remember where they came from, their connection to the unity of life. And when they operate from there, they bring well-being and strength to the body and joy to our consciousness. The text even lists things that help conscious body work, attention practices, meaningful work, finding equanimity, love, gratitude, kindness, all ways to support that positive side.
Okay. The text keeps coming back to the ego as this embodied consciousness, but really hitting home its limitations when it's cut off, separate.
Yeah, it reiterates the ego gets a body from creation. And the body is the arena where it can either fail or, you know, really grow.
But usually it messes things up.
Well, the text describes the typical ego lifestyle as confusing the body's innate wisdom, the wisdom in our genes, poisoning the body, which is literally made of Earth's elements. It suggests we've sort of shut down the connection between our fascial perception, which it says we share with all life, and our conscious awareness. We've blocked the natural flow of our feelings, and the result, thoughts become really hard to manage.
And this separate ego, it judges things based on society's thinking.
That's the idea. It differentiates, evaluates based on societal norms, which the text describes the place where the shadows, the repressed stuff can run rampant for the benefit of a few, leading to more exploitation.
So our consciousness is being fed by unconscious stuff and filters.
Pretty much. Fed by unconscious regions, and then incoming impressions get processed through filters, our body state, where our attention is, unconscious patterns. And often the main way it sorts things is just by vibration. Pleasant or unpleasant. Simple as that sometimes.
Which leads to isolation.
Yeah.
Competition.
Often, yes. Isolating, competing with other egos instead of living from what we share, from connection. It identifies with the body, sure, but often ignores its needs and limits while pushing it too hard.
And all the stress, the overwhelm we talked about.
Yeah.
Where does that go?
According to this text, it expresses itself as dissatisfaction, restlessness, irritability, physical tension, pain, eventually even illness. All that unprocessed stuff from us, our ancestors, our environment has to come out somehow.
And that bit about the ego whispering arguments, I found that really relatable.
Me too. It describes the ego constantly whispering justifications to itself, ways to rationalize its lifestyle and get what it wants. And the shadow, that hidden part, just gets bigger and stronger the more we listen to those whispers.
So it just interprets everything through its own wishes? Feels separate?
Yeah, sees itself as separate, categorizes things arbitrarily. Instead of appreciating, it exploits and poisons. And to kind of cope with the reality of doing that, the text says the heart has to close down, to repress the awareness.
It's a pretty tough picture it paints. It really does bring that question back. If the ego is meant for organization, why does this text suggest it's so prone to causing problems and getting stuck?
And again, the text consistently points to that core separation, the filters, the attachment to its own limited self-justifying story as the root cause.
But thankfully, it doesn't just leave us there, right? It does talk about the potential for learning, harmonizing, if we connect with the self.
Exactly. That's the hopeful turn. The text says, when connected with the self, the ego can learn. It can start to see where those inappropriate emotions or thoughts or reactions are actually coming from.
Like seeing the roots.
Yeah, seeing the roots in overwhelm or old entanglements patterns like self-pity or a lack of self-love, for instance. It can also learn to see that the source isn't always just inside us. It can be in our environment or on other levels too.
So seeing mismatches in how we react, those become clues.
Exactly. Hints about unconscious stuff needing attention rather than just personal failings. And maybe the biggest shift, it can learn to orient its emotions and thoughts towards quality, towards the self, towards depth, instead of getting lost in quantity, just chasing more and more, stuck in time and space.
And there's this idea about energy, vibrations.
Yes, the text brings in this energetic perspective. It views the basic structure of life itself, emotions, thoughts, the environment, as being fundamentally vibrations, vibrations that have been interacting and influencing each other forever.
Okay, and the key principle there is?
Energy follows attention. Where you put your focus, that's where your energy flows.
Right. So how does that help the ego harmonize?
Well, the text suggests that by using this principle, the ego can consciously work to harmonize its own vibrations. Mm-hmm. How? By focusing consciously on the body, on its energy centers, through dedication, doing meaningful work, practicing mindfulness, meditation.
So internal practices.
Yes, and also by consciously tuning into harmonious, powerful vibrations in the environment, like in nature, maybe, and actively bringing that feeling, that harmony into your own life.
So it's not just conceptual, it's giving practical ways to work with this energy idea, consciously directing attention to create inner harmony.
Precisely. Grounding these ideas in ways you can actually practice them.
And when that connection happens, when the ego connects with the self, the text describes a real shift, doesn't it?
A transformation, yes. It says the ego changes from being that struggling boss into a consciousness that can remember stillness, even when things are chaotic. It starts to recognize the deeper rhythm, the melody of life, and learns how to actually follow life's flow rather than fighting it.
And it circles back to define the self again.
It reinforces it, yeah. Reminds us the self is something that goes beyond the ego's limits. It's perceived with the body, not just an idea. It's not just a program or passing state. You don't acquire it or learn it like a skill. And it exists independently of all our personal confusion and entanglements.
The text uses beautiful language here, calling the self a companion, a guide.
It does. A companion and guide for the ego on its journey, helping us feel more deeply, think more clearly, opening us up to inspiration. It says the self can open the door to infinity right here on every level of our being.
How do we recognize it then, this self?
The text suggests we recognize it as the core of our being, conscious and unconscious, through a kind of inner knowing, maybe an inner longing, a quiet certainty. And also it's reflected outwardly in how lovingly we perceive and treat our own body and our environment.
And accessing it involves harmony between head, heart, belly.
That's the idea. Access comes when the ego centers head for thoughts, heart for emotions, belly for perception, and body center start vibrating in harmony when they're aligned.
And that leads to that really powerful image, the ego's noblest task.
Yes. When connected with the self, the ego's highest potential, its noblest task, according to this text, is to become an instrument. An instrument in the hand of life, or the all-encompassing self, essentially becoming the eye through which creation itself gets to perceive its own incredible beauty, diversity, and wonder.
Wow. That's a huge shift from the boss in the house idea, from isolated boss to creation's eye.
Exactly. It's a profound reframing of the ego's role not to be eliminated, but to become this conscious, perceptive channel for the self to experience life through it.
Okay, that's a vision. So how do we actually do that? How do we nurture this connection? What did the text say gets in the way, closes the door, and what helps keep it open?
It's pretty clear on the obstacles. The door to the self narrows with carelessness, not being authentic, too much stress, and especially it highlights fear. Fear is a big door closer.
Okay, but when the door is open.
Then the text says we receive the strength and guidance we need right in that moment, not just for us, but for our community too.
And it gives actual practices, things to do.
Yes, specific actions to help keep that door open. Things like really care for your body, consciously release tension, both external and internal, work on refining your perception, freeing your emotions, letting them flow, centering and calming your thoughts. Relaxing your core, that solar plexus area, and opening your heart to inner light and love.
That's quite a list. And it all seems to come back to one core thing, perception.
That's the key it emphasizes. Perception is the door. Why? Because truly perceiving yourself and truly perceiving your environment, according to this text, that is perceiving yourself. And the kicker, that deep, true perception, it only happens always in the here and now.
Always in the present moment. And
always. Which leads us naturally to, okay, how do we actually practice this? How do we cultivate perception in the now and connect?
Right. So what does this mean for you listening? The text doesn't just leave it theoretical. It offers some actual journeys, exercises you could try. It suggests, for instance, that if you manage to get your body relaxed, your perception open, feelings free, thoughts quiet, you might notice a certain quality.
A quality like freedom, peace, joy, strength, love. Something that doesn't quite feel like it's from your usual ego self. Maybe something you only sense in that specific moment, like you're touching a different dimension, the self.
And the text has this beautiful idea that the self intersects space right where we are and time always in the now.
Meaning we can potentially touch the self in any moment, any real encounter. It suggests the self might be the very force that forms and carries all of life. You can see it maybe in the infinite diversity of every touch, every shape, every support system, from cells joining together all the way up to the unity of all life.
And it makes that powerful link again between our inner state and the world.
A really stark suggestion. Our survival as a species might actually depend on whether we personally and as a whole society manage to open up to each other and to this common inner reality, the self.
Okay, so let's talk about those exercises. The first one is called Who Am I?
Right. The instructions are basically relax, close your eyes, notice your breath, feel your body, feel the earth pulling you gently. Then just observe whatever perceptions, thoughts, feelings come up. That's your ego, the text says. but observe them without getting caught, without identifying. Let them drift by, maybe imagine them dissolving down towards the earth.
So watch the ego stuff, but don't grab onto it.
Exactly. Then consciously shift your attention, dive into the space that remains inside you, yourself, in your body. The text calls it the space where all those ego things appear and disappear like fish swimming in water. Recognize that space as the self's home, the silence there. That's the self's music.
It notes that even perceiving this space involves the ego.
Yes, the ego is the perceiver. Use your breath, your body's center, as anchors if thoughts pull you away. The goal is to feel the kind of joy that comes when the ego's usual boundaries soften and open towards the self. Notice what usually separates you from this feeling in daily life, and then gently reconnect through your body, through your breath, and it ends with that simple line, all that is you.
Wow. Okay, and the second exercise, encounter with the self. Using a tree.
Yeah, using a flowering tree as an example. It invites you to actually stop at a tree, consciously enter its space, letting go of your usual hurry, your sense of time. Encounter it through light. Maybe think about the light's journey from the sun to the tree, like the text describes.
Okay, so really be present with the tree, with the light.
Then notice your own process, how your body and brain create the image of the true for your ego. Watch your ego's reactions. Maybe you immediately want to take a picture. Notice the thoughts, emotions, memories that pop up. Just look at them calmly, the text says. Don't judge, just notice.
Then there are steps to deepen it. Opening consciousness.
Yes, opening consciousness. Imagine the vastness the text described, the infinite space, time, force carried in that light flowing through the tree. Then opening your center. Close your eyes, feel your body. Where else besides your eyes do you sense the tree, the light? Is your attention drawn somewhere, belly, heart? How does the light, the tree, feel in your center? Can you sense a link between the image inside you and the real tree? Feel the light's invisible vibrations, maybe strength, joy? Feel the flower's beauty in your heart.
So connecting through feeling, through the body's center, then connecting to earth.
Right, connecting to earth. Bring awareness to your legs, your feet. Imagine roots growing down, connecting with the tree's roots deep in the earth. Give your attention to the earth itself, the earth that holds and nourishes both the tree and you.
And connecting through breath.
Finally, connecting via breath. Just observe your breath flowing in, filling you. Feel how you're connected to the tree through the very air it helps clean. Feel enlivened by that shared air.
That's quite a process. How does the text wrap that exercise up?
It ties it all together beautifully. It states that the very same self that acts as particles and vibrations and the elements making up the tree and the earth also creates our body and vibrates in our own perception, emotions, thoughts. So when the ego consciously gives its attention to this self in the tree, in the light, in the earth, in the breath it gives itself over, and in that moment becomes one with the self again.
So opening the heart to that deep body perception.
Yeah.
That completed the circle.
Exactly. Completes the circle of creation through our feelings and the ego's insight. And that opens the door to the self.
And the text encourages trying this game in everyday life.
Yeah, absolutely. Try it when you're looking at people, when you're just breathing, cooking, working. Just notice. When does your ego feel open, present, silently aware? And when does that door feel closed, maybe showing up as aches and pains or inappropriate emotions or those restless, circling thoughts?
And the advice is to just gently return.
Gently return. Return your attention to what feels obvious, good, simple, light-filled. Let yourself be enlightened, the text says, by the depth you can find in these simple encounters. And share it. Share your insights, your joy. Recognize the self in the very act of sharing with others.
So we've really journeyed through this deep dive, haven't we, into this one specific, very rich source text. We've looked at its detailed picture of the ego, its struggles when it's separate.
Contrasted that with its description of the self, this vast connected reality. And we've explored the specific ways this writing suggests we can bridge that gap, reconnect.
It definitely offers a framework for potential change, doesn't it? For harmonizing within ourselves, which the text suggests fundamentally changes how we relate to others and to the whole world.
It really emphasizes that connection between inner work and outer reality.
And it leaves us chewing on that really provocative thought, doesn't it? Tying our personal journey directly to our collective fate.
That maybe our survival truly depends on whether we, individually and together, manage to open up to each other and to this common inner reality, this self.